from National Public Radio. NPR Playhouse presents Nightfall.
In the dream, you are falling, lost in the listening distance as dark locks in. Nightfall. Good evening. Tonight, we have a special holiday treat for listeners who really like to settle into a show. It's a kind of box lunch. Based on the Victorian short story by Sir Walter Besant and James Rice, and dramatized for the series by John Gavin Douglas. It's called The Appetite of Mr. Lucraft.
You wonder.
Yes?
I see you wonder at me, in the midst of all this holiday cheer and plenty, why I eat and drink so little. Oh, yes, a host of men have killed themselves with gluttony, but to be eaten almost to death by the ravenous feeding of another, you'd think, would you not, that I'd been amongst the cannibals? Why, I have. Let me tell you about it. Let me tell you how I disagreed with something that ate me. My appetite was hereditary. One of the few things I can remember of my mother was a constant complaint that my father used to eat her out of house and home. It was the same when I became a strolling player, wandering the provinces with a down-at-heels troupe of actors. We were poor as church mice, but it was share and share alike, and they said I ate for four. For all my hearty feeding, I was slim and played Romeo very badly. And this was only the truth. For I loved and was loved by Juliet Cairns, named long ago for Shakespeare's Juliet by her father, the theatre's owner. We dared not show our attachment for very fear of Mr. Cairns' anger. But one night, Shakespeare betrayed us. Carried away by our passion, Juliet and I forgot to act. The audience, entranced, seemed not to breathe.
It is my soul that calls upon my name. How silver sweet sound lovers' tongues by night, like softest music to attending ears.
Romeo!
My dear?
At what o'clock tomorrow shall I send thee?
By the hour of nine.
I will not fail. 'Tis 20 years till then. Good night. Good night. Parting is such sweet sorrow that I shall say good night. Till it be morrow.
But misfortune of misfortunes. Old Cairns himself was in the audience that night. The audience thought it was good acting. He knew what he saw. Next morning, the instant he caught sight of me...
Mr. Lucraft, be so good as to step into my office at once, please.
Mr. Cairns, sir, I'm very sorry about last night, truly I am.
Now, look here, Lucraft, you're a good young fellow and a likely actor. Well, I can't have you spoiling my Juliet for the stage, so I'm going to put her up without you.
But, sir...
You get away from here to London and find yourself another engagement.
Mr. Cairns, I love Juliet.
That, Mr. Lucraft, is the problem. You needn't say goodbye to her, by the way, because I've had it out with her this morning. Tough job it was, too.
She and I, but... We...
My boy, when Juliet is married, or you get rich or something, why, you see, we shall all be glad to have you back.
They all say that there's no work in London. I'll starve.
Oh. Yeah, well, here. There's a week's pay in advance. That's the best I can do.
The next few weeks were even worse than I had feared. There was no work in the provinces, and in the theatres of London, not even an extra. One day at noon, after paying the rent, I found myself without a penny and gnawed by a hunger greater than I'd ever known. Faint and starving, I leaned against a lamppost outside a dining room where a host of people were lunching. Hares, fowls, and turkeys were piled high in the window with boundless prodigality among a wealth of carrots, turnips, and cauliflowers. And through the open doors came a perfume more delicious than the sweetest strains of music, accompanied by the torturing voices of diners.
Waiter, roast beef with plenty of brown.
Oh, heavens, plenty of brown.
Roast mutton underdone.
I love my mutton underdone.
Roast veal and bacon with stuffing.
A dish for the gods.
Calf's head for two.
I could eat calf's head for a dozen.
Pudding.
Soup.
Fish.
Cheese.
At that moment, as I was nearly fainting, there came down the street a monstrous old man, bearing before him, like the Lord Mayor, a gross and swollen abdomen, walking very slowly as if the exertion might kill him, and leaning upon a thick cane. He had white hair, white whiskers, and a purple face. Indeed, he might have resembled St. Nicholas, except for his eyes, flushed with red veins that gave him a wolfish expression.
Young man, you look ill. Have you been drinking?
No, sir. I'm only hungry.
Oh, so hungry. Here's a pretty fellow for you. Hungry? I'm a sensible position a man can be in, and he dares to complain at his luck.
Complain?
What are the lower classes coming to next, slave hunter? This London is a gigantic caravan, full of the most splendid things, Richard only wants an appetite to eat, and he's got that, and he laments.
What is the use if you have no money?
He's yours. A small appetite as a rule, or is it? A large one.
Large. Huge. Born with it. It's very awkward just now.
Come with me now at once.
But
don't
sir.
Talk. Let me interfere with the further growth of your appetite. Walk slowly and keep your mouth shut.
Pushing me down a maze of alleys, he lumbered close behind, muttering to himself with that awful chuckle and grunt.
So, what a fine young fellow it is. What room for the development of the gentleman's arts? What a backbone for the support of a belly! Heavens, what a diner might be made of this boy, if only he had money!
Turning into a narrow, hidden court, he bent with great difficulty to a little black portal. It seemed to blow into the keyhole with his mouth.
He has for a table, and what a leg to put under it.
And the door opened. And then it shut behind us of its own accord. We stood in a large room, resplendent with the light of at least 40 wax candles, in whose shimmer there gleamed a magnificent dining table, set for one. And beside it stood what I then thought was a man.
Young sir, permit me to introduce my servant, Paul Denay.
My heart be delight to meet friend of Massa.
You have a pretty tasty name, sir. Have a servant black as night and call him Snowball.
Golden age. What do you think of him?
Oh, him. A very fine young man, Massa. Got lovely appetite developed. He live much longer time than last other young man. How much do you think you eat tonight?
We will try him with a late luncheon first, Bolognese, and then pronounce on his performance. Young men do not always come up to their profession.
What dying, Mother? Dying himself?
I don't know. Perhaps not till 9 o'clock. Perhaps not then. Vanish, Bolognese, and serve!
Did the ancient servant go through the floor? Did the table sink when he disappeared and come up loaded with succulent dishes? It seems so.
Food! A banquet! Oh, let me eat.
One moment, only a single moment.
Tell me again the nature and extent of your appetite. And
oh, be truthful. Our little tongue should never lie for mutton chop or apple pie. You know the hymn?
I've got the devil of an appetite. What is there to lie about?
My dear young friend, yours may be fierce at first and promise great things and then end in a miserably small performance. I have known such. Is it a lasting appetite now? Is it steady through a long dinner?
Just wait till you see my performance. I never had a long dinner in my life.
But is yours an appetite that recovers itself quickly? Is it good at all times of day?
Unless I wish it were not.
Hush, young man. Do not blaspheme. Tell me, if you eat your fill now, it is 4:30. When do you think you might be ready again?
I should say about 8. But I might do something light about 7, I dare say. Right now I could eat a mountain.
A mountain! Wonderful are the gifts of Providence.
My dear young friend, I am very thankful, deeply thankful that I met you. Sit down and let me take the covers off for you. I long to see you eat. I will wait upon you myself. No one else. Just we two. And the delectables.
Eggs. He has eaten all 6.
Turtle soup.
Gently, my young friend, gently. Impetuous youth. More. Stay, let me add green fat. Chuma, your appetite.
Don't drive it.
Fresh canopy.
Salad with cucumber and lobster sauce.
Bless me, it's like a dream of fairyland.
Fillet of sole with white grapes and almonds.
It's like watching mighty Caesar. Look at him.
Crocade of an eye, gone like a cloud from the sky. Don't move for food, my friend.
Tasty.
Sweet breads and burgundy wine and mushrooms. It smiles at the dear little innocent confiding car. Corporate with it, eh?
Mauviettes en casse.
Larks in baskets. Sweet, rapturous singing larks, toothsome, cocky, yelly larks.
Eat them up. Bones are all. My dear sir, and drink something. Here, a champagne, hock, and soda. Never touch sherry. It's a made up wine, even the better it.
Come, a little champagne.
I generally take draught beer, sir, but if you please, a little fizz would be acceptable.
Now, my dear lord, my palace of Troy. Here's a saddle of mutton with potatoes, cauliflower au gratin, buttered eggplant, and currant jelly.
Oh, champagne. Please,
it's worth sums of money to see him. Curry chicken with salmon, rice, and chestnuts.
Stuffed quail. Snipe en brochette.
It takes all 3.
I, Alexander, my Goliath of
Cats.
Plenty of rice, my Napoleon. Here's more. Much more. Now.
Apricot jelly and cabinet pudding. Cheese brie.
Yes, sir.
Got a port with the cheese. Oh, King of Bashan. Last of all. Strong bread. And a teeny, tiny glass of liquor.
Sir, I'm more grateful than I can tell you.
And the gratitude. Tell me, do you feel any sense of repletion? Is the blood mounting to your head? Quite free from giddiness, no thickness in the speech?
Why, no, sir. I am, as you see, an ostrich.
An ostrich, you say? It's providential, my finding you. Our blessings truly come when we least expect them. Come, to business.
Business? Are you perhaps offering me a clerkship in your office,
no,
sir?
No, listen to me. You have no money. In a few hours, you will be hungry again. You will feel great pain and suffering greater than is felt by men less largely endowed with a supreme blessing. Appetite. Oh.
It is a great trouble to me, sir, when I am hard up.
Why, there, we are agreed already. Let us have no more beating about the bush, young man. I will rid you of this nuisance. I will buy your appetite of you.
I beg your pardon?
A strange offer, I know, but nothing easier. Read this.
I, Luke Lucraft, being of sound mind. How did you know my name?
Touch man in your detail. Read on.
Do voluntarily and of my own free will and accord agree and promise to resign my appetite entirely and altogether for the use of Ebenezer Grumbelow from the day and hour of execution of this deed.
In return whereof I agree to a monthly allowance of £30. What do you say?
I think I should like some time to reflect.
Reflect? What the devil does the boy want to reflect about? Has he got a penny, a friend, or a chance in the whole world? No or never, Archer.
Well, I...
Well?
I accept your offer.
Why, there's my brave boy. Boldiness!
You very lucky man, young master.
Sign here, my dear sir.
But there's no ink. He cut me.
Only tiny prickle, Mazza. Just little drops of blood on pen. So
we have no ink handy, dear boy. To sign in blood is a mere form, the merest form. That's it. Done. Done. Boldness. Inner chem. I feel myself getting hungry already. Oh, blessed day. A huge dinner, Boulonnaise, with Curacao punch.
Why, Massa Grumbelow, I think young Massa gonna swoon. Just like the lady in a play.
When I came to myself, I was home again, in my squalid little room. On the table lay...
A letter? Addressed to me?
It was from a firm of solicitors, Crackett and Clarges, dated that evening at 5:30, half an hour after I signed the paper stating that they were empowered by a client whose name they never mentioned...
Give Mr. Lucraft the sum of £30 monthly to begin this present day... Payment will be made in person to Mr. Lucraft, who is requested to call at the firm's offices, 16 Lombard Street, at his earliest convenience.
I stared at the letter with a mixture of stupefaction and horror. The monstrous beast, the bargain, were no dream then. How had they got their instructions? The clock struck 7, and slowly, surely, a sensation began to grow in me. At first, a sense of fullness, then repletion, and finally, of choking, as if I were eating too much. By a kind of awful insight, I knew at once what was going on. The old man was taking his dinner, and taking more than was good for me. Soon, he began to drink too much as well.
Oh, my God! I'm getting drunk, and I haven't touched a drop.
My head began to spin. Sugar sweetness, bite of lime and lemon, fumes of alcohol like steam from a volcano filled my throat. He was drinking, gulping the Curacao punch. I would run to find him, tear up the agreement, but...
His name?
But, I've forgotten the old glutton's name. Next morning, I woke with my head splitting and my stomach in flames. I hated the sight, the smell, the very taste of food. Forcing down a tiny morsel of breakfast, I went with heavy heart to the solicitors to receive my blood price.
Ah, oh, Mr. Lowcroft, I thought you would soon come round to us after the letter. Here, sign that. You haven't been long. None of them are.
May I ask, sir? If you know...
I'm not allowed to answer any questions you may put, Mr. Lowcroft, nor to ask you any. So take your money, and good morning to you.
But I have to know...
I suppose, like the rest of them, you don't know the name of your benefactor, and would like to. Yes. But you needn't ask me. Before you say it, I've orders not to admit you to see either Mr. Clarges or Mr. Crackit. They trouble enough with the last one of you. He broke into their office once, drunk, and laid about him with a poker.
Drunk?
Oh, God!
However, oh, Mr. Lowcroft, I hope you will be more fortunate than your predecessors.
Where are they now? Who are they?
Dead and buried they are, all of them. Gone to kingdom come. Delicious trimmings killed them.
Oh, delicious. God forgive you.
Poor old gentleman, your patron, I mean. He's too good for this world, as everybody knows. He did say when the last went off, he would have no more. He wept over it and declared that his bounty was always abused. But there never was such a benevolent old chap. I only wish he'd take a fancy to me.
What did you say his name was, by the way?
Why, if you don't know, I am sure I do not. Here's your check, Mr. Lowcroft. But I fear there is a blight on the recipients.
Oh, indeed.
Lord, what a healthy chap Tom Kirby looked when he first came for his checks. Strong as a bull and fresh as a lark.
A good appetite, had he?
No. Couldn't eat anything after a bit. Said he fancied nothing.
Oh.
Pined away and died in a galloping consumption. Nobody ever saw him drinking, but he was drunk every night, like the rest. Went out in 3 months. Better luck to you, Mr. Lowcroft.
From that moment on, I lived in hell. Every day at 1:30, the grossness of his heavy feeding weighed me down. But at least at midday, he drank. At night, it was pure horror. His dinner began at 7. At 8, I was gorged and choking. At 9, I was drunk. One morning, I woke up in a police cell with no idea how I'd got there. And on the next, I lost my lodgings.
I thought you was a quiet and a sober young man. Never will I trust your good looks again. Me and the lodgers kept awake till 2 in the morning with your singing and dancing, let alone banging on the floor with the chairs.
Mrs. Grogan, I
not
swear
an hour after your week's up. Not if you was to pray on your knees shall you stay. Neighbors next door threatening the police, and me a quiet woman for 20 years.
I detested food and drink, and I detested life. My bones protruded. My hands began to tremble like a drunkard's.
Your check, Mr. Lewcraft. Look here, sir. You know, you're going it worse than poor Tom Kirby. What is the good of a fella's drinking himself to death? Your poor old gentleman was here yesterday, asking me how you looked, and if you continued steady. Pull up, old man, and knock it off.
Asking how I looked. Oh, what a wager he was. That hardened old voluptuary, that secret murderer, he must have noticed by the falling off of his splendid appetite that I was going down. And he was resolved to kill me off by drinking me to death. In my misery, I was determined to forestall him. I prepared to kill myself first. But the next evening at 7, as I sat in my lonely room, awaiting yet another drunken bout, suddenly...
My God! What is it? I've never felt like this before. It's gone. Where's the choking feeling? Where's the drunkenness? It can't be. It can't be that... I'm free.
Where is he? Where's that Dan Clark? Let me see him.
Moderate your language, Mr. Lewcraft. This is a solemn moment. It is my melancholy duty to inform you that your patron is dead.
I knew it. I knew it. I've been a free man since last night. Look at me. I'm cold sober.
On such a sad occasion, I should certainly hope so, Mr. Lewcraft. I have the honour to present our senior partner, Mr. Crackit.
Mr. Lewcraft, my deepest sympathies. The poor old gentleman is gone at last. Apoplexy.
I know. I didn't understand it at the time, but I felt him. I felt him depart last night.
A most affecting sympathy. If you will examine this deed, Mr. Lewcraft, you will find that Mr. Grumbelow is as generous to you in death as in life, sir.
Grumbelow. That's the name. Grumbelow. Why generous?
He has left you £500 in his will, Mr. Lewcraft. Look.
500. What for? What is he up to now?
An ungrateful turn of phrase, young man. Mr. Grumbelow's love for the poor and humble was a byword to all who knew him. He asked nothing but that you care for his aged servant. Mr. Boldenege here. And cherish him as if he were your own father.
No. No.
Why, Massa, Boldenege, very good servant. Cook a lovely dinner. Make young Massa rich like Massa Grumbelow.
Rather hire the devil.
Mr. Lewcraft.
If Massa likes, that can be arranged.
I
I fled that dreadful presence forever. But I had saved a good deal of my monthly payments from the old monster, and my old master, Mr. Cairns, welcomed me back with open arms, and so did his daughter Juliet. I've been a happy man ever since, except for a certain distaste for the groaning tables of Christmas, as you see. A month after our marriage, I told my darling Juliet the whole story. She asked if I took her for a fool. All the same, she has never allowed me the key of the spirit's case.
You have just heard The Appetite of Mr. Lucraft, the short story by Sir Walter Besant and James Rice, adapted and dramatized for radio by P. Norman Cherry. Featured tonight were Graham Haley as Lucraft and Douglas Campbell as Ebenezer Grumbelow. Nikki Guadani played Juliet, with Leslie Yeoh as Mr. Cairns. Abbott Anderson played the mysterious Boule de Neige, and you heard Robert Christie as Mr. Crackett and John Peters as the law clerk. Other voices in the cast were played by Maureen Fitzgerald. Our recording engineer is Ray Folsick, with sound effects by Matt Wilcott. Our production assistant is Nina Callahan, and the series story editor is Earl Toppings. Nightfall is produced and directed for CBC Radio by Bill Howell. And now, here's a final word from your host.
Hello again, and as they say, here's to you. Tonight's program concludes a 13-week run for Nightfall in the United States, and it marks the first time the CBC has had the opportunity to broadcast one of our radio drama series outside Canada. And what a fine time it's been. Week after week, we've been inflicting ourselves upon you. And amazingly, you've kept coming back for more. Now, this must mean either that you're crazier than you think you are, or that we have more to share together than anybody could possibly imagine. At any rate, the people on the Nightfall unit have asked me to thank you for listening and for writing, and to wish you all the very best of season's greetings. And finally, to remind you, no matter what happens in the coming year, be careful of the edge.
Funds for the distribution of this NPR Playhouse presentation were provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This is NPR, National Public Radio.